You're listening to the highlights from the Creative Processes interview with computational biologist and electronic musician Max Cooper. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
Unspoken words was my attempt to describe that. I find it so difficult to use words to, you know, I can describe technically things as a scientist, you know, and we have language to describe. You could say the neural correlates of consciousness, right? You could describe what they are and how the brain functions and behaves in an objective manner, but that really doesn't seem to get anywhere near the question of what it's actually like to be a human. To get to that, I need, you know, music. Essentially for me, is I can sit down and I can make a chord progression and I make a musical structure that resonates with how I feel at that moment and seems to capture things which go beyond anything I can put into words. And that was the idea of the Unspoken Words project, to try and capture those things and then interpret them with visual artists. And for me, that's as close as I can get to describe what it's like being me. So yeah, that, I'd say you just have to listen to the music and then you'll hear what it's like, I suppose. So Salzburg Festival is the classical and opera festival, a very well-renowned one. And I think each year they have some sort of electronic related project that, you know, amongst this non-electronic program. So they asked if I could do that. And they said that their program this year was around Italy. So Italian opera, Italian classical music. Yeah, Palestrina was one of the main discoveries, like interesting and beautiful discoveries for me, because I was delving into a lot of historic Italian music and a lot of it just didn't really lend itself to what I'm interested in musically. A lot of it was commissioned by very grand people for very grand places to sound very grand, and that didn't really resonate with me. But when I found Palestrina, it was music from the 1500s that was written for worship, for it was church music really, and it was just for voices, and it was just for voices. It didn't have extra instrumentation. I find the most beautiful projects are the ones where I can map a natural system explicitly, because there's two ways of doing things. You know, a lot of my projects, if I'm approaching some sort of very human idea, for example, like I would be with Unspoken Words, it has to be quite interpretive. You know, a lot of my projects, if I'm approaching some sort of very human idea, for example, like I would be with Unspoken Words, often there's not like a quantitative system I can represent. But I really love when I'm working with a natural system, which is real, really boiled down to something. I mean, Fibonacci sequence is an example of that, or the distribution of the primes, or the digits of pi in a tree map, or waves, or symmetry. There's these ideas which are really foundational to science and really foundational to nature, but are really boiled down to simple quantitative systems. Even also emergence of cellular morphogenesis, for example. I find that whenever I do a project with a visual artist where we're representing something really boiled down in nature, instead of seeing the artistry of the artist or my idea, what we see is the artistry of nature. And the artistry of nature is always richer than the artistry of a human, in my opinion. And also these ideas, they're always full of mystery, that you can take the simplest ideas, like the distribution of the prime numbers, the numbers that can only be divided by themselves or by one, and how they're interspersed amongst the non-primes. And it's a really simple boiled down system, but one that we still battle with. Mathematicians, they still haven't totally solved how they are interspersed and how the structure works. And nature seems to be full of these sorts of inexplicable but really aesthetically rich ideas when you boil it down. And it's finding those things that's led me to want to find more of them, just because I find artistically it's almost like nature foundationally is built in an artistic manner. Quantum mechanics is another very well-known example of this sort of thing, where when you boil it down you get these seemingly paradoxical or certainly unusual ways of reasoning and the way things work, which doesn't plug into our everyday life very well. Nature seems to have these like artistic tricks hiding in there. And I love that idea of delving in and looking for the foundations and finding these really rich structures in there, which, you know, we can present as art, because it comes out richer than any art that I could make myself. And then once we've got these visual systems, the challenge is how to, you know, interpret them musically, for example. So that's a whole other challenge. There are a lot of musicians that do, you could have the music being purely generative, but I find that then it often misses. For me, I want the music to be emotionally engaging, and that means having particular structures. So I try to embed some sort of generative aspect or some sort of mapping aspect but then I also add a lot of human composition on top of that, so that ultimately I want the music to sound nice and to be accessible and to carry an emotional message, as well as showing the structure, as well as delivering concepts of the structure, extra instrumentation. So it was fairly minimalist in that sense, but it was full of beautiful harmonies and this really reflective feeling. And the harmonies and the reflection really lend itself to a lot of the things I like musically already. So I was able to take these original scores from Palestrina with the help of Neil Zorenz and Tom Hodge and Kim Sheehan and Sarah Aristidou. We worked together on these things, but we were able to take the original scores and more or less keep the Palestrina as it was. There was one of the pieces that we modulated a little bit into a more slightly more modern scale, and we slowed them both down as well to give each, you know, harmony more breathing space. But essentially we could stick to the original scores, and then Sarah and Kim sang the vocal layers and I played synth layers and Tom played piano. And yeah, it just was a really nice musical discovery, which I wouldn't have come across if I hadn't had that unusual brief of trying to make a project around Italy. Yeah, I mean, I love working with historic sites. I've done a few events and installations working in old cathedrals. We did one with the Andan Festival in Leuven, and then and Carlisle Church in Belfast with the ABA Festival guys, and then obviously the Acropolis and lots of other venues where I love venues where I can turn up and map projections onto architecture, so that you could present the ideas of, you know, the imagery, but you also augment the structures that are already there. And you can, particularly when you're using old historic buildings, they come with so much, I don't know what the word for it is, they're full of feeling and ideas before you already from the history and what you associate them with. So then when you, that embeds itself into the music and the visuals that you're presenting. So you get this extra layer of, yeah, engagement and emotion and ideas coming through, which I love. So yeah, whenever I can, I try to use, you know, project. And also I generally use projectors rather than screens for that reason, so that I can use the architecture and try and make the show itself interact with, I just find it more, well, it's just adds to the storytelling, I think. And it just makes it feel more special. We're all used to going to clubs and festivals or whatever, that the big black box of the club, and there's a sound system and there's a screen, and you know, we're all used to that. But when you go to somewhere crazy historic architecture and you're having a party inside that and there's all these moving things, it just feels more, yeah, it's just the extra magic basically. I was interested in classic Italian sculpture and painting, and worked with an artist called Usato and a dancer to map human movements to these simulations of sculptural form, so it looked like there was these living sculptures and living paintings and things. Yeah, that was an interesting process. Yeah, that was an interesting project as well. That was Tom Mustill, the director, and then Kevin and Padraig McLaughlin. They were also directing and making the animation for an awareness film for COP26. And then all the vocal stems came in, and it was, you know, Greta Thunberg and the Pope and Nico Rosberg, and I can't remember. There was like 50 sort of very high-end celebrities that whose voices I had to then mix in with the music and play around with. And it was a really beautiful project. And then it was projected on the Opera House, I think, in Glasgow. I think it was in Glasgow, the COP26. So yeah, that was just a commission project, which we all believed in. It wasn't a paid thing, as far as I remember. It was something we all did to try and tell a story around awareness, essentially. People are very aware, I guess, now. It has changed a lot since, you know, the last 10 years. So doing these sorts of projects is important. The Birds is by Yoshi Sadioka. That's the Fibonacci sequence project from the new Seme project. So Yoshi is another long-term collaborator based in New York. And he's been specializing in these really amazing sort of overlays of flying birds with mathematical systems and linking bird flight into different geometric forms. So he got these simulated bird flights to paint out the Fibonacci sequence. And then as it hit the gridded cross lines where it reached the next values on the sequence, if that makes sense, the drummer, Quick Bass, would play the drum hits in time with the mapping of the sequence. So that, again, that was like this question I said earlier. We're working with an idea because it's part of the brief. It's to do with Italy, okay, Fibonacci, the Fibonacci sequence, and it's a famous Italian historic sort of scientist. How do we do it visually? Okay, we can paint the picture out visually, mapping the numbers to the spiral. And then, okay, rhythmically, that also, if that's moving, that spiral's getting painted at a constant rate. It's hitting the points at a particular rhythmical intervals, and the drummer can play those intervals. So then we end up with a musical structure which maps the visual structure, and then I can play the synths around that, linking back to sources. And transparency, essentially, is what's needed. Well, that's one thing that I think would be helpful. But yeah, I mean, there's tons, it's a minefield. I don't have the solutions, and I'm not deep into that world, so I shouldn't comment on it too much, really, other than it's something that is interesting, and I'm hoping for, you know, it's exciting. I'm hoping for lots of new tools. Another thing to mention is when I write music, I'm not proficient at playing any instrument, and I already use tons of generative techniques. I build systems to wander around different timbres and to sample different notes from scales, and my process is already full of generative systems. I set up these things that sort of wander around, have a bit of life of their own, and I'm taking little bits of them and I'm interacting with them. And a lot of that's really similar to how I imagine, well, and how I already do work with AI systems. They're collaborators, and in that sense, it's not as different as what I used to do as people might think. It's just becoming more obvious. And I think the history of art is full of these things. I get there's that Vermeer, you know, the artist who did these hyper-realistic paintings, and people couldn't believe how amazing they were. And in more recent years, people have come to realize that the way they did it was with lenses and taking real scenes and focusing light onto canvas and copying the color from the real color to the painted one. It's like a procedural system for creating art. And that's always been the case. And I think most artists do have procedural systems that you follow through to create art. So I think there's a difference between the reality of how art's made and perception of how art's made. And with AI, that difference is being made clear, I guess. I think the arts are important to teach us what we are on a deeper level than the sciences can. On a complementary level, the sciences don't teach us everything. And we're moving, as the sciences become ever more dominant and technology becomes ever more dominant, the arts become ever more important for us to stay in touch with the things that the sciences can't tackle, what it's actually like to be a person, what's actually important. We can have this endless progress inside this capitalist machine for greater wealth and longer life and more happiness according to some sort of metric, or, you know, we can try and quantify society and push it forward. Ultimately, we all have to decide what's important to us as humans, and we need the arts to help with that. So I think what's important really is just exposing ourselves to as many different ideas as we can, and being open-minded and trying to learn about all facets of life so that we can understand each other as well. And the arts is an essential part of that.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.